what I hope sets us apart is that we start with our why. Why are we doing this? And, you know, if we look at the why, all the other parts, you know, the how and the when and the who all come out of it. We start with the why. And for me, the why is about trying to improve the standard of living in New Zealand from a construction point of view.
G'day and welcome back to another episode of Homestyle Green. This is the podcast dedicated to inspiring people to make a better place to live. And this week on the show, I'm speaking with Ben Engledew. Ben owns Livewell Construction in Christchurch, where his aim is to build warmer, drier, healthier homes for New Zealanders. And he hopes to improve the building industry, basically, the way that we build and the way that we live in our homes. I started out by asking Ben a bit of background, how he got into building in the first place.
I started actually in design. I was a primary school teacher, but I did a degree in design and education. That's where, back in the day, you know, I was 18, 19, went to university and did design with education. So, and then did, and was a primary school teacher. And so I moved away from my design side of my life and got into the education side of my life. Spent 15 odd years doing that, did it all around the world, and really enjoyed teaching. But I also lived in Switzerland. So I lived in a nice warm house in Switzerland that had triple glazing, and we barely heated sometimes, you know. And I thought, this is interesting. Anyway, shelved that disappeared, you know. It was just part of my experience of life at the time. But then living in New Zealand, and the earthquakes came along. And that was a big, you know, big catalyst for change for a lot of people and a lot of things. And I heard on a daily basis on the radio the desperate shortage for builders, and that the BCITO would sort of give you a little golden handshake for joining in. And I thought, well, maybe this is it. This is my time. So it's 8 years ago, I went and did my apprenticeship with Trevor Hone of Sumner, who's an architectural hillside builder. And it wasn't just earthquake repairs. It was, you know, it was new builds on the back of the earthquake. And there was so much work that builders like Trevor could take a risk of taking on a mature apprentice. And because they just needed hands. And so he was said, oh, yeah, you're a bit old. Yeah, you're having a midlife crisis. Oh, yeah, but yeah, I'm in.
How old were you? I
just turned 40. So, yeah. Right. Yeah, but, you know, I'm embracing it. Come on, give us a go.
And were there others that you knew of who were embarking on an apprenticeship at that?
I wasn't the only mature apprentice, you know. Yeah, and it was good.
Yeah,
it was good. It wasn't easy because you join in, you know, and you're in amongst with all the 18-year-olds, and you're 40, and you kind of sit there with a different life experience, and you know, you've had management experience in schools and, you know, worked in a professional field, and now you're using a wheelbarrow for a chair, and, you know, sitting around having your smoke, go, you know, talking the chat that builders talk. And it's it's quite a different, it's a strange transition, but it was, I haven't looked back. I love it. I love the active lifestyle of it, the fact that you're outside all day.
You also mentioned you talk about a little bit on your website the things that you learnt and you brought over from your teaching background. So things like planning and creativity, problem solving. You know, building's all about problem solving. But a key one there that you talk about is communication. Do you think that is lacking still in the building sector? And how do you resolve that or try to improve that with your clients?
Yeah, I think, I don't know. I mean, the builders I know are great communicators, but they're the builders I know as well, though. They're in a field where they're surrounded by intelligent clients who want a better build because they are building energy efficient homes. So they have to be good communicators to thrive, because they're dealing with clients who demand clear communication. But I feel that if you turn up on time and get the job done, a lot of people are satisfied with that. Then the next level after that is to work with the client and to solve the problem, but also do your best to meet the client's needs in terms of reassuring them everything is going well. And so communication is critical, but communication is at the center of every beautiful relationship. You've got to be clear, and you've got to work towards the same goals. And I think if you have empathy with your client, if you understand what's going on in their life, then you can work towards a goal with them that's beyond just the building, beyond the fabric. It's something else. But it's not easy. That's the challenge.
Well, the key, like you said at the start, is getting better clients. How do you do that?
How is that done? I think, to be honest, I don't. You know, as I said, I haven't been in this game long enough to know how to do that. I'll be honest. I think it's really important to. I know when I was teaching, you basically, if you're a good teacher, you're interviewing the school. So if I went for a job interview, they would be interviewing me, but I'd be interviewing them. And I think it's the same thing when it comes to clients. You've got to see if it's going to be a good match, and if you're going to rub each other up the wrong way for 12 months while you're building this, or if you're going to get along smoothly. And if you anticipate you're not going to get along smoothly, you need to have some strategies in place to make sure that you're not just making life hard. Going back to communication, I think that's where, if you can communicate and work with your client and set parameters, make those clear, then you're certainly on the right track.
And I guess part of that is also your marketing and your branding, which brings us to Live Well, your company. Tell us about Live Well. What sets it apart from just being another building company?
What sets us apart? Now, I had a little think about this because I did know, you're possibly going to talk about this. What I like to do is actually look at things in terms of big problems. Like, it's like, what's your greater good? What's your goal? You know, am I in it just to try and make some money, or have an income? Well, there's plenty of ways I could do that. What I hope sets us apart is that we start with our why. Why are we doing this? And, if we look at the why, all the other parts, the how and the when and the who all come out of it. We start with the why. And for me, the why is about trying to improve the standard of living in New Zealand from a construction point of view. That's why the Live Well came about. It was that it's not just about building well, it's about living well within that build. And that's critical for me, is the why we do this. So why is, if we can get the best designs, the best materials, the best people, and mix them all together, then we should be aiming there for getting the best outcome for the client. But it's not just about architectural hillside homes. I would really like us to be looking at how we can develop inner city land to build medium density housing that is really comfortable and healthy for people who really need it, not just big flash houses on the hill somewhere.
Yeah. So that now you obviously you're involved with Living Building Challenge. You're a member of Superhome. You're Passive House qualified as a certified tradesperson. How did you get from apprentice to that stage? You know, when did you hear about things like Passive House off the bat, or how did all that come about?
I remember this little moment where I was sat on the step outside a build in Sumner, chatting to a Sparky, and I said, "Oh, I've had a hell of a morning." I said, "Oh, what have you been up to?" "Oh, I've been trying to put the power into this airtight house." And I was like, "Huh? Airtight?" And he said, "Yeah." "Oh, I don't know what they're trying to do there anyway." And I thought, "Airtight? That's curious. Why would you want an airtight house?" So I quizzed him a little bit more. And I found out that this airtight house was having an open day well house design. I went along, had a look around it, thought, this is something special. And I was in a transition out of being an apprentice. I thought, oh, well, this is a good step. Let's have a look. So I made some inquiries, found out who the builders were and what was going on, and just sort of pitched myself towards it. Right. And then, I thought, well, this is more interesting than what I've, you know, this is a different direction than what I've been doing. The house was small, it was well designed, it had interesting materials, had glue lam and LVL and prefabrication, all these things I hadn't heard of, you know. And then,
right, so during your apprenticeship, none of that was addressed?
No, not at all. Energy efficiency wasn't discussed at all. Square meters, that's all we want to know, you know.
Wow.
What kind of cladding are you putting on? No disrespect to Trevor, of course, but that's the market he's working in.
But also, the framework that you're in there, the building construction industry, the training organisation, part of the structure of the apprenticeship, was energy efficiency part of that training at all?
Code compliance. As long as is it code? Yep, then it's good enough. You know, there was good ways to put insulation in and not so good ways. Somebody said, "Oh, yeah, it's a bit gappy." "Oh, is it?" "Yeah, sorry." Yeah. And that was the end of the insulation talk, you know. Right. That was the training of insulation.
Wow, so concepts like airtightness effective insulation that works and is probably well above code would have been a completely new
concept. It's not there. It's, you know, I feel on an apprenticeship, we're sort of learning how to, we might be learning how to put together a Morris Minor, but we're not building Teslas. We don't know, you know. No. It's different. We're getting enough to be useful on a site to build a code, a house to code. And then after that, once you finish your apprenticeship, then you learn how to be a builder. And once you've learned, and then you learn how to make some money from it. But that's where it takes you. It's not, I don't feel that, you know. And then so what happened then? I met these guys who are building this house, and I meet German master carpenters. I actually speak German, so it was helpful. I could talk about what they were doing. But
yeah, because this must have taken you back to Switzerland, right?
So then all the little pennies drop, and you go, "Oh, that's why." So that's why we had these big, thick walls. I mean, I know it was about insulation because Switzerland's cold, but it's also about where's your dew point in the wall. And then Mike, who I was working with, he gave me some stuff to read. And then, of course, in that journey, I want to improve myself, and that's where Pro Climber came along. They offered this scholarship. So I threw my hat in the ring for a scholarship to do the Passive House Tradesperson course. And that was a huge leg up for me. It was fantastic. Yep. I managed to go and stay with a mate up in Auckland, did the training course, managed to pass the thing, which I was really thrilled about. Hard, man. Cara really front loads the information, and you come out with your head burning. But it was great.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then you had I've seen it done. Now I understand why it's done. Then it all starts locking in together. And
off the back of that, you have the ability to do it. Have you had any trouble finding clients who want to go that far?
Thankfully, personally, I haven't. I think there are lots of clients out there who want to go that far. The problem is, the real problem is, they want to do it, but they haven't worked out how much it's going to really cost. And the hard part about that is, it's very difficult to cost, because you can't just flick them a nice square meter rate. You know, you can't. I certainly couldn't. I mean, there are people who've had more longevity in the industry than I have, and they're doing it really well. You know, Simon Wansbury from Third Little Pig, or Peter Bielski from Ethos Homes. You know, these guys, they're great. They know what they're doing, and they can price. And I think and Glenn Harley from, you know, Glenn Harley Builders, they really know what they're doing, and they go into it very openly and say, but they basically say, are you sure you can afford this? Because people want it. You know, lots of people want a Maserati, but you've got to pay for it. A lot of people, but these cars, these houses are, you know, they are the cutting edge of technology in New Zealand. And because of that, they're quite difficult to afford to build. So you've got to, if you find the client that's got realistic expectations about price, then you're okay. Because it isn't, you know, you've got to make sure that your designers are on the same page, because they might design something that looks pretty, but it doesn't, it's not going to function. Well, it'll function eventually, but it won't be very economical to get it to function.
So it sounds like framing that correctly to the client, making sure that they're prepared to pay and the extra is the main strategy. Are there ways to bring the cost down?
Well, I think so. And that's the sort of other string to my bow, really, in the direction I'm heading, is that I am working very hard to import products from Europe that are tried and tested, that meet international standards, that will lower the costs. Just because they've got bigger manufacturing facilities than we have, and a key component of that are the windows. If I can bring in windows that save the client $20,000 or $30,000, then that's what we're doing. We're bringing in windows that save $20,000 or $30,000. That's then $20,000 or $30,000 that that client can wisely spend on design, air tightness, and insulation, or can blow it all on a fancy kitchen if they want. But that means I've saved them a chunk of change, and that way, they can then, move forward going, right, well, we've got the windows sorted and we've saved this much money. Let's do that. And then we can, now we can safely go forward with getting the ventilation system in, for example.
Yeah. So that's a realistic saving that you're finding from importing sort of mass produced but high quality windows from Europe, instead of, what are you comparing that to? A New Zealand made? Yeah.
Well, you've got fabricated UPVC windows to my best of my understanding, New Zealand, all the extrusions are manufactured overseas anyway, and they come in containers and components, and then the joinery gets done in New Zealand, so they get cut and glued together here. In some cases the glass is imported, so triple glazing. I think there are some places that are starting to actually manufacture triple glazing now, but I can get triple glazing for cheaper than locally double glazing, right? So and the different,
The IGU unit.
Yeah. So that means I can get windows framed up for much cheaper. Now, one of the reasons for that is the company I work with over in Poland, Bertrand, they employ 350 people. They've got thousands of square meters of assembly that use robots to produce a lot of the parts. They put it into a computer, it comes out the other end. Now, okay, I might be undermining the local economy. I understand that. But then I don't buy my iPhone made by two guys in Timaru, you know? We don't.
Yeah.
I don't. My Toyota Hiace van isn't put together by a bunch of mechanics in my garden, you know? It's a manufacturing world. And the extrusions are imported to New Zealand, as are the timber profiles, because New Zealand timber we can't use for making windows. It's too the grain is too open. It's too fast growing. If we're looking at a New Zealand made timber frame, there's big savings to be had.
And there must be some constraints there in terms of time required, but also are there design constraints? Do they only come in standard sizes?
No, there's everything's bespoke. Everything's made to measure, so it's made off plan. What we have to do is ensure that the planning team have looked at the rough opening size to make allowance for flashings, etc. The flashings are hard. In Europe, Germany doesn't use flashings. Flashings are for what do we want flashings for? Maybe your rain's different. No, it's not different. It still comes down at the same angles. It's just different methodologies. So, brands say we have to have flashings, so we have to put flashings on.
This is to do with paranoia about E2 and water ingress from the inside, but it's based on the assumption that they're using aluminium frames that are going to
leak. Also aluminium frames that run with condensation on the inside, and so much so that you have to drill a hole to allow the rain out.
A drainage hole, so you just sort of design, you got failure designed into the system, and I guess that what you're alluding to there is the whole industry is paying the price for that, because even though your windows aren't aluminium, you're still having to comply with these sort of wraparound rules that require things like flashing.
It changes incremental. New Zealand is moving towards this, and bit by bit, if we keep pushing, if we give up and just go, oh, stuff it, it's just too hard, we can't get the system to change, then we'll have, aluminium windows that run with condensation forever. I'm sitting in my 1905 cottage with timber sash windows because nothing better has come along. It just hasn't. Yeah. It's still the same.
Yeah. Yeah.
But one day we will. I've got a good hookup for some cheap windows, so I'll be all right. But we've got to keep pushing for incremental change, step by step change through the industry. Air tightness is now something that's discussed. Triple glazing people have heard of. If you're in the market, ventilation systems, insulation beyond the code requirement, you're actually insulating to the needs of the climate that you're building in. That's all happening, but only in certain spheres, Everyone else just wants a bit nice big house.
Yeah, with extra wardrobe and big pantry. Coming back to the process for importing windows, obviously, if you're the builder, then you know what your tolerances need to be. But has there been any pushback from the industry, knowing that the windows have already been ordered, they're on their way here, and the hole has to be the right size?
It makes people nervous. What I'm trying to do bit by bit over time is build up a sort of checklist for the builder and the designer. It takes them through step by step and shows why we need certain things. Like, for instance, my rough opening for a window, I will leave 15 millimeters all the way around, because that gives us room to get the flashing. Because the windows are located centrally in the thermal envelope, they're not placed to the exterior like a normal aluminium is. It's a different process to get the flashing in. And, I'll be honest, we're still developing it. builders are coming up with different solutions, and the more we can work together as a collective, as a group of builders who want to do better than and build above code, we work together to come up with these solutions, we'd actually be making each other's life easier. I can provide this product. So the pushback comes just with I'm a bit scared. But we've brought in hundreds of windows now. I did a big development down in Queenstown, 32 apartments. Not one of those windows was the wrong size. Not one.
Yeah.
And there's over 250 odd windows. And
And the holes were the right size for them.
Well, mostly. But occasionally something gets missed, and that's just human right. error. We've 100 milled it, it's just got 100 mil too small. That happens, but then that can be fixed, on site. A window frame can be made bigger if the window opening can be made bigger or packed out.
Yeah,
it's a bit harder to change the window, but we haven't had to do that yet. Oh my god, done it now. Yeah, good. Jinxed it.
yeah. So what does that look like for you from now? You mentioned you're transitioning. Mm-hmm. You've still got a few projects under the go with mm-hmm. Live Well, building company, but you're starting to look at offering windows to the market?
Yeah, so the windows have been available to market for a while, but now I haven't advertised much. I've sort of kept it just on the down low, just worked with a few builders who were interested, but as we've gone through the process and learned a lot in that process, I feel confident now to move forward and take that wing of the company and expand it so we can really offer a really good product to a broader range of builder. Mm-hmm. We're pricing up a development up in Auckland, which a passive apartment, which is fantastic.
Mm.
Yeah, 22 apartments, pricing that up. Doesn't mean you're going to get it, but pricing it. I did some development down in Queenstown, 32 apartments, as I say, and one of their biggest selling factors, they said they're absolutely thrilled with the product, Bullendale Development. They said, was that people loved the windows. They came in and they're like, wow, where are these from? Yeah. These are amazing. They're beautiful. And the soundproofing is fantastic, And but also it's about trying to find the right people to share that space with. So it's a showroom with windows in, but it's also a place where a client can come and say, oh, here you've got windows. Yeah, here we are. Oh, what's that? Oh, well, that's a ventilation system. Oh, I've always wanted to see one of these. What's air tightness? Let me show you this. What's that? Oh, well, now we're into solar. The idea is you've got your bases covered, your ventilation, your insulation, your air tightness. And it's a place where people can come and have a chat.
Because they're not going to get that. They're not going to get all that from the Home Idea Centre or someone who's just sort of showcasing all the touchy-feely stuff and the code compliance stuff.
The joinery showrooms, they've got all that area covered. All the sort of window dressing is covered, isn't it? We're looking at beyond the skeleton. We're into the muscles and the fibre of the home that sort of says, well, this is how it performs. Code has been about structure for a long time, very structure orientated, and then it became very about weatherproof. We had big problems with leaky homes. It became very weather tight orientated. Well, maybe the next step is we're going to be insulation orientated, and that's hopefully where code will go. So we'll go beyond having just the worst possible home you can build, and into something that's healthy for everybody. You're not just the super rich.
Yeah, you're kind of alluding to it there, but outside of the current situation with everyone being sort of locked down and quarantined, what do you see as the biggest challenges for the building industry, and where would you like to see the building industry go in the next sort of 5 years?
Well, if it went anywhere in 5 years, I'd be extremely impressed. It's a slow moving machine. So in 5 years, I think I'd love to see more dialogue. I think that would be the right direction. So that brands and, you know, the are actually talking about improving the performance of a home. And then I'd like people to be talking about size and actually saying, look, why do we need to have, why have we gone down a sort of hot rod V6 model of a house? There's a lot of, you know, I've looked into this and enjoyed sort of doing my homework on it. And, you know, there's a lot of fascinating directions, sort of paths that we've been down. We followed the American model of building. If we'd have been more influenced by Europe in the building, we would have gone down a completely different route. And instead of living in big, cold, big, hard-to-heat homes, not cold necessarily, but they're expensive to heat, with, you know, 100 square meters per person in some cases, just bonkers. We'd have gone down a different model. But in 5 to 10 years, I would say that we're going to be talking about this more. In 10 to 15 years, we're going to be doing it more, but we're still going to be 20 or 30 years behind Europe. I mean, Weber House, fantastic company in Germany, they've been prefabricating homes with free plans that are energy efficient for 30 years. You know, they've been doing it. They're celebrating. Yeah. That's one company's been celebrating. They're celebrating their 30th year. We haven't even got there yet.
What's the biggest hurdle for us to get
mindset,
to
that point? I think. Just our attitudes. It's what we expect from a home. New Zealand. I mean, obviously, might be able to tell from my accent, I'm from England. And we live quite densely. We live in small homes that are banged together. We're crowded in. You know, I understand. It's not very desirable for a lot of people. But our homes are warm. When I finished work, I cycled home through the snow and I got into my house. The house was warm. It wasn't costing a fortune to keep warm. And dry. And I didn't have condensation running down my windows, you know.
It's a good picture, and it doesn't have to be that hard. Like you say, you know, we know how to do this. It's not a technological challenge. It's more of a mindset, a local mindset issue, and figuring out that the rain is not different here from other places.
We do get some driving rain. We do get some pretty wild storms. And we do have to look after our homes with regard to that. But at the end of the day, water does, capillary action is the same and condensation is the same because it's physics.
It's the same physics, different
hemisphere.
Hey, Ben, where's the best place for people to reach out if they want to learn more about what you're up to and maybe have a look at some of the windows you've got?
Oh, that's great. Thank you. So you can find us on www.livewell. Now, it's spelled badly because I couldn't use two L's on the ends. There was some kind of old people's home that already had that. So it's LiveWell, just one L on the end, .co.nz. That's her webpage. Then we're also same spelling on Facebook, and there's an email address. You can just drop me an email, ben@livewell.co.nz.
Awesome.
Happy to answer any questions.
And that was Ben Ingledew of Livewell Construction. Check out Livewell at Livewell with one L at the end, as Ben explained, livewell.co.nz. And there you can find information about the Bertrand windows and doors as well, which are beautiful, beautiful windows and doors. You can check out. There's a link through to their European website as well. You can have a look at their whole range there. I'd love to know your thoughts on this episode and others. You can email me, Matthew@homestylegreen.com. Love to get your feedback, and also love it if you could share this episode and this podcast with others if you find it useful. We're on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and also on Spotify. So lots of places to find us, and we'd love it if I could get a review or rating as well. It really helps get the message out there and other people to find the podcast. Thank you very much for tuning in. Now go make a better place to live.